Is your cell phone company pro-life? Charity Mobile sends 5% of your bill to the pro-life or Catholic charity of your choice. Mention Relevant Radio and get a free smartphone along with free activation. To take part in this special promotion, please go to charitymobile.com.
The following is a Relevant Radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
And now, broadcasting to your universe, it's the Drew Mariani Show.
Media reports in Los Angeles indicate that Suge Knight has been booked on a murder charge connected to yesterday's fatal hit-and-run in Compton, California. Authorities say that half an hour before the hit-and-run, Knight got in an argument on the set of a film being made about the rap group NWA.
We intend to productively engage the MTA regarding the union's ideas on how to run underground subway train lines, even under blizzard conditions.
The New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks are wrapping up their final practices of the week today. The teams will hold a walkthrough tomorrow and then are set to meet for the Lombardi Trophy this Sunday at University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, Arizona.
Ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be a well-known performer and singer, and then when I saw Whitney Houston's version of the national anthem, I was truly inspired and hoped one day I could do something like that.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It is 6 minutes after the hour, and welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. It has been a very, very busy program, and we turn our attention now to something that is really cyclical, the amount of attention that the death penalty receives culturally and obviously in the news media. It does seem to be something that is so very cyclical. I'm 53, and it tends to be, it pops up on the screen, I'd say, every 10 or 15 years, and it's doing that right now. And so we have asked Anthony Granato to join us. Anthony is a policy advisor in the Office of Domestic Social Development in the Department of Justice, Peace, and Human Development at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. He is an Oregon native, and he holds a master's degree in history from Portland State. He has done his graduate-level studies in intelligence and national security studies at the American Military University. Before joining the bishops at the USCCB, he served as a legislative assistant to the Oregon Catholic Conference and worked at the Archdiocese of Portland, Oregon. Anthony, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. How are you today?
Wendy, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here again on the show. I appreciate the time.
Would you agree with that assessment that it's cyclical? I mean, and probably not, I was probably incorrect to say every 10 or 15 years. It does sort of flash, it reaches a flash point more often than that. But this thing that is, you know, on the, you know, it's not in our consciousness on a regular basis, is it?
No, I mean, at the local level versus, say, the national level, there's been a lot of activity, as you know, cases where the states have moved to abolish the use of the death penalty. Maryland, for example, a recent case where the bishop's very active. But unfortunately, the issue comes to the forefront in people's minds through the media and such. When you hear of these horrendous cases of botched executions and such, and of course, there's a flock to tell those stories, and so you see them come up in that way.
I am in Missouri, and we have had, you're talking about compounding, the drug compounding question. The Supreme Court recently, within the last couple of weeks, agreed to take up a case concerning the lethal injection protocol that left an inmate in Oklahoma to die a very painful death and actually gasping for breath. And this is something that has the attention certainly of Catholics. And while culturally the pendulum seems to swing, as Catholics, the church teaching is very, very clear on this, isn't it?
Yeah, the bishops, you know, and the popes have been very, very clear. I mean, the statement that came out from the USCCB on Monday, you know, Cardinal Sean O'Malley, the Boston Archbishop and head of the Pro-Life Activities Committee, was very clear when he said, you know, capital punishment must end. Archbishop Charles Chaput, not known for being on the left side of the spectrum in the bishops' conference was very clear. You know, he said in the past his children of God were better than this, and we need to start acting like it. We need to end the death penalty now. And so Pope Francis has recently called again following St. John Paul II, Pope Benedict, that, you know, Catholics and people of goodwill need to work to end the use of the death penalty. So it's been a pretty clear position for some time.
Has the Innocence Project, I mean, there was just someone released after decades in prison. That seems to be something that happens quite regularly. The Innocence Project, I think, has had a big impact culturally on the way people feel about the death penalty. When you see the prison doors swinging open and someone who was wrongly convicted going free, that definitely alters your perception.
Oh, I think so. I mean, you know, I think when you look at the politics in America today, there's on various sides, whether on socially liberal or more libertarian-leaning people, a question of the role of the state to effectively carry out really what the bishops call a state-sanctioned violence. You know, and we look to situations where DNA evidence has exonerated people, but I think it's important to note that you can't always rely on DNA alone in this because we know that DNA evidence exists in really only about 10% of these cases, so there's probably a lot more, many more cases of innocent people on death row than we know of. And I jokingly say, you know, when you talk about the trust of the state or a larger institution to carry out something like taking someone's life, you know, there's a lot of people I know who wouldn't trust the state to deliver their trash on Tuesday, let alone kill somebody. So I think you see a definite hesitancy in the public arena about the state's ability to effectively carry out this type of activity.
Because of social media, because of the internet, we have access to, you know, criminal files, Anthony, that we've never had before. And what we learn about some of these criminals is almost, in many cases, it's too painful to even read. That, I think, is something that emboldens those who are pro-death penalty. And yet, you know, we have to speak with clarity and with charity that no human life is beyond being touched by God's mercy, and that even if it is the last hours, someone can be redeemed.
No, you're absolutely right, and I, you know, I think about this myself. You know, it's one thing for me to speak on behalf of the bishops and say, well, this is what the church teaches, when I don't have, or I've never experienced something as heinous as, you know, we look at the case of the three gentlemen who have brought the case in Oklahoma to the Supreme Court. One of them, a Mr. Cole, you know, we see he broke his 9-month-old daughter's spine and killed her. And so it's natural for people to respond and say, that's horrendous. How can we in any way show mercy to persons such as this? And it's understandable that people feel that way, but, you know, I think nonetheless Christ calls us to something deeper, more perfect, and more profound, and that is really, even when it's tough, even when it's hard, and even when we see people who commit grave acts of evil that we could never support, that undermine human life and dignity, we all know, we still know that there's a God of love and mercy. And he calls us to proclaim a gospel of life and hope and mercy, even in the face of evil.
Anthony J. Granato is policy advisor in the Office of Domestic Social Development at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops in Washington, D.C. We're talking about the death penalty, challenges to the death penalty. If you would like to join the conversation, you are always the most important part of the conversation here on the Drew Mariani Show. I know many of you have your thoughts about the death penalty. The number in the studio is 877-766-3777. That's 877-766-3777. We need to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Talk Radio for Catholic Life. This is Relevant Radio.
I'm Chuck Neff. Thank you for joining us on The Inner Life, our program about spiritual direction. We come to you every weekday to give you just a little bit of help on your journey of faith. We're going to talk about study and prayer today. Let's head to the phones. Hi, Jill, and welcome to The Inner Life.
Hi. I started reading the Credo Memorare book from Father Rocky, and that is just my go-to prayer. I was living a life full of fear and full of worry and anxiety for so long, and this prayer just brings me so much peace that Mary is working with me, through me, to get closer to Jesus, to help me be stronger. Thank you so much for the beautiful prayer. Oh, what happened, buddy? Well, I'm sorry. I better get back to my little guy.
Live radio. I love it.
Father Rocky's book, Pray the Memorare, is available at relevantradio.com in the online store. The Inner Life, noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
This is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, interactive with you, also online at relevantradio.com and our Relevant Radio app.
John Harper of Morning Air.
It is talk radio for Catholic life. We share our faith lives together. We grow together in faith. We also read the gospel every morning here on Morning Air and have a lot of fun. Play Three Questions, Glenn's Story Corner, very motivational as well.
Morning Air with John Harper, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern, 6 Central on Relevant Radio.
Strap on your seatbelts and get ready for the ride. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, with the University of Mary's year-round campus program, students can earn their bachelor's degree in 2.6 years. That's right, 2.6 years. Less time, less cost, less debt. Come see how the University of Mary is proving that less can be more with its new year-round campus program. Schedule a visit at cometomary.com. That's cometomary.com. And again, we are talking about the death penalty today. There are several challenges, and the Supreme Court is going to hear the case of Oklahoma prisoners who have had to deal with compounding lethal injections and lack of protocol. Anthony J. Granato of the USCCB is joining us. He is a policy advisor in the Office of Domestic Social Development there in Washington. And we do have some listeners who want to share their opinions with you, Anthony. So let's go to Mike in Austin, Texas. Hi, Mike. Welcome to Relevant Radio. You are on the air with Anthony Granato. Go right ahead.
Hi, Mike.
I'm driving, so I hope I can say this intelligently here without the catechism in front of me. But I believe the catechism says something to the effect of capital punishment is not permissible, or lethal punishment is not permissible when non-lethal means can still keep the public safe, or something to that effect. So my question is, considering that, and I'm not bashing the Muslim faith, but so many of our inmate population does seem to take on a radical Muslim fundamentalist slant while they're incarcerated, and so we certainly, like the Boston bomber, if he's convicted, he will no doubt, he's obviously not going to be a threat to the public himself, but can he influence others? And then when they are released from prison, they then become potential terrorists. So, in other words, just because we can physically lock someone up doesn't necessarily mean we can contain the danger that they have. So, in that case, is capital punishment permissible? Sorry if I didn't say that very clearly. But
No, thank you for your question. I mean, you're right. I mean, people by nature are social creatures, so it's very actually hard for us not to influence others around us. And in the case of the Boston bomber, others or skinheads or what have you who preach, you know, messages of hate and undermine human life and dignity, sure they could influence. You know, but as the church is teaching, yeah, you're right. As you point out, you know, the only way the death penalty is considered legitimate for the church is that there's no other way to effectively defend human life. You know, it's hard to stop people from spreading a message that may in the long run impact someone to carry out an attack against human life. But I would still think that the church in that case wouldn't say that that rises to the level where that person should be killed, just because it's a much more distant impact or distant way that person is influencing others. So I would say in that regard, the church would still uphold, that person's life should not be taken.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Mike. Let's go to Dave in Minnesota. Hi, Dave. Welcome to Relevant Radio. You are on the air with Anthony. Go right ahead.
Hi there. I didn't quite hear the answer to the last one. It's somewhat similar, but it would also be an exception I'm always wondering about as we consider whether death penalty is ever moral. One would be, do we consider the lives of the other criminals in prison? You just see so many shows on TV where you get some hardened or severely violent criminals that take the lives of many others within prison itself. If they're a danger there, does that qualify as an exception to this case for the death penalty from the Catholic perspective?
Well, thank you for your question. And again, I'm answering on these hypotheticals, so this isn't, straight catechism here. But I would say, there are situations where inmates are dangerous to other inmates or prison guards, and of course, from the church's perspective, all human life, no matter who it is, because everyone is created in the image and likeness of God, has value. But it's incumbent upon prisons and jails and our criminal justice system to protect inmates and to protect prison guards. So I wouldn't say that the recourse to killing an individual is the right choice. What needs to happen there is to improve the criminal justice system, to make jails safer, to make sure that jails aren't turning people into worse human beings, into dehumanizing people, rather than kill someone. I think killing someone would be a very utilitarian approach to the problem that can be solved in a more humane, an effective and efficient way.
Sure. I think that's a good qualification that you put. And does ever the cost of these sorts of security within prison and what it takes to hold someone for the rest of their life, is ever that deemed extreme in these situations? Is that taken into account at all? Because the costs are astronomical to keep someone for long, 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 long periods of time in prison.
Sure, but we know, data is very clear that actually death penalty cases are more expensive. In fact, there are a lot of reasons. For example, many conservative groups now have come out in opposition to the death penalty simply because it costs too much to hold someone in prison for life, actually, when you take account all the adjudication that happens, the appeals and such. It actually is more expensive. And so there's been a very strong turn in conservative circles. Richard Viguerie here in Virginia, for example, kind of the grandfather of conservative mailings and such. He's Catholic. He's come out against the death penalty, and he is about as conservative as they come. They see it not only as an affront to human dignity, but very expensive for the taxpayer.
Very interesting. I didn't know that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dave, for the phone call. And before we take some other calls waiting for you, Anthony, in terms of the culture of death, and, we just marked the anniversary of Roe. And when you think about the abortion, the scourge of abortion, and the impact that's had, I think that's one of the last reasons. I think a lot of people who are pro death penalty probably don't make the connection, but subliminally, when that is a part of your culture, how can you not see that any human life, even the human life of a convicted criminal, is still worth something in the eyes of God?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. I think it's emotionally more, it's easier for us to think about, innocent lives that are taken through abortion versus, say, someone who's committed a heinous act. We do have a culture that in many different ways glorifies violence and death in a lot of ways, quite honestly. Whether you're talking about abortion, the death penalty, or half the things you watch on television, death is glamorized, and the bishops have weighed in on this. But I think the church, you know, you look at the Gospels. I mean, in St. John Paul II in Evangelium Vitae, for example, uses the story of Cain and Abel to make a very strong point that even in the face of the murder of his brother, you know, God spares Cain's life and even actually chastises and says, I will chastise and I will punish those who try to kill you. And it really gets to the root of what the church, and I think the gospel is saying, is we really need to take seriously, as much as it's difficult, if we are going to challenge a culture of death, we really need to do it by really lifting up human life, even in the not-so-easy cases, talking about mercy and really saying, you know, everyone is created in the image and likeness of God, whether they're unborn or they've committed a heinous crime. We are all created in God's image, and I think that's kind of how the church is trying to lead people in the development of its teaching on the death penalty, is really in the case of promoting mercy.
Let's go to Mike in Minnesota. Hi, Mike. Welcome to Relevant Radio. You're on the Drew Mariani Show. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment how important I think this guy's work is to push back against this culture of this, you know, death. Because it is an aspect of the whole culture that's really in the court of death. Because the problems that the courts have nowadays with you know, the imprisonment of so many innocent people that, you know, I'm sure you've heard and know the stories of all these people being released from death row because of DNA stuff. And the problems with the courts and evidence making it so easy on circumstantial evidence to imprison people for life and things, that it's very important work just to push back on these courts and the legal system, because they're losing what the sense of real justice is, you know, for the just so they can you know, convict people and have records of conviction and claiming they're fighting, you know, crime or whatever.
Well, Mike and Anthony, I know you would agree. We have to, as Catholics, we have to continue to push back, because as strange as it sounds, because we are talking about criminals, we are talking about criminal behavior. We are talking about the worst kind of criminals. But you have to understand that when their lives become worthless, and when we act as God and decide that they are beyond redeemable, when only God knows that, you know, it's a hop, skip, and a jump to euthanasia, you know, and making those decisions in other areas about human life, isn't it, Anthony?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, the issue that's brought up here in this question, in this discussion, is in one of the other areas that the bishops are very very strong and have been working very diligently on is the issue of criminal justice reform. You know, this is a broader discussion, but really looking at how sentencing is applied and who is sentenced and for what crime. So I think it's actually it's very legitimate to raise that issue. And I've been lately really thinking about the issue of retribution, actually. And I was, because I represent the bishops on the death penalty, but also broader criminal justice reform. And I've, you know, there's a quote by St. Thomas Aquinas in the Summa Theologica that I think it's just apropos here. And he said, and it was in the secunda part, he said, you know, in this life, however, punishment is not sought for its own sake, because this is not the era of retribution. Punishment, rather, is meant to be corrective by either being conducive either the reform of the sinner or the good of society. And I think that's something we've forgotten about, is punishment must have a reforming aspect to it, not only to safeguard society, but to reform the sinner, to reform the person who's committed an evil act. Punishment is not legitimate if it's for its own sake. So I think that's an important thing to consider, broadly speaking, in our criminal justice system.
Thank you all for your phone calls. I apologize we weren't able to get to more. I think, Anthony, we can certainly look forward to the Holy Father speaking out about this from the Vatican, and then when he actually visits the United States next fall. Anthony J. Granato, Office of Domestic Social Development, for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops in Washington. Thank you so much for making time for us, Anthony. We do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back. This is Relevant Radio.
Are you ready for a new career? Want to make a difference? Good news. Catholic Order of Foresters wants to hire Relevant Radio listeners. Become a Catholic Order of Foresters field representative and receive customized training. Be a leader in your Catholic community. Strive for personal and professional growth and work for yourself, but not by yourself. As a Catholic Order of Foresters agent, you'll help fellow Catholics realize their financial goals and desire for security, utilizing top-quality life insurance and annuity products.
The Catholic Order of Foresters allows me that opportunity to offer the families that I go to church with financial security. You know, at the end of the day, I feel great satisfaction and a great sense of purpose knowing that I made a difference.
Advance your career with the Catholic Order of Foresters. Call Mark to find out if Catholic Order of Foresters is the right career fit for you. Call 855-696-2085. Catholic Order of Foresters. P.O. Box 3012, Naperville, Illinois, 60566. 855-696-2085.
Hello, I'm Father James Kubicki, and being the director of the Apostleship of Prayer here in the U.S., I'm often asked about prayer, how to pray better. I think the readings we have at Mass today can be helpful for us here. And that's the first step in praying better, devoting regular time every day to the Bible. That may sound overwhelming and you may think, where do I begin? Don't worry. The Church helps us by giving two scripture passages every day. In today's Gospel from Mark, Jesus talks about the kingdom of God in terms of a mustard seed that starts off very small and grows into a nesting place for birds. And Jesus also says that seeds sprout and grow without our knowing how. We don't need to know how, because God gives the growth if we provide the right conditions. That's the way it is with prayer. You don't have to spend long periods of time in prayer. I'm a big believer in brief prayer throughout the day. Like seeds, these short, microsecond prayers will lead to an entire day in which you grow in an awareness of God's presence. And, given the struggles of contemporary life, that's very important. Here's where today's first reading from the letter to the Hebrews comes in. It says, "Do not throw away your confidence," and also, "You need endurance to do the will of God." Short prayers throughout the day can help you not lose confidence or trust in God, and they can also help you endure whatever trials you are facing. You're not alone. God is with you, and all you need to do is to try to be aware that He is with you, ready to help you at every moment of the day.
For more prayer resources, go to relevantradio.com, keyword pray. It's National Catholic Schools Week, and Relevant Radio would like to take a moment to salute the teachers, parents, and students that make our Catholic schools great.
Monsignor Stuart Sweatland.
A great challenge from Pope Francis, where he's saying the purpose of education is to introduce and make possible for students to live the new way of a Christ-like life. Jesus is the reason for our schools. And I think that all too often is lost sight of in our educational endeavors. I think this is a little examination of conscience, that all our educators focus on the Lord and ask the question, how is what I'm doing at my school bringing the students closer to the Lord, allowing them to know Him, love Him, serve Him, know how it is that the power of the resurrected Lord is touching and transforming the lives of all involved in the educational endeavor, students, faculty, staff alike. And I think that's a great challenge from Pope Francis.
Relevant Radio, saluting all Catholic schools during this National Catholic Schools Week.
Broadcasting to your universe, your Sherpa guide to the mountain of life, it's Drew Mariani on Relevant Radio.
If you want to share your faith with a family member or a friend, but you're not sure where to start, there's a very easy way to do it. Just tell them to download the Relevant Radio app. The app is free, and it's an easy, terrific way to encourage someone to learn more about the Catholic Church. Download the app in the App Store on your phone or Kindle, or go to relevantradio.com, keyword app. Well, the Super Bowl, of course, I mean, the media blitz has already started, and you can hear about the Super Bowl on just about every media channel, every media outlet. But there is a dark side to the Super Bowl, one that you don't hear a lot about, and the Holy Father has actually talked about it. And our next guest is a champion in this area. He might be the only person talking about it. Representative Chris Smith is a U.S. representative for the great state of New Jersey's 4th Congressional District. He's been representing that district since 1981, and he is considered the dean of the New Jersey Congressional delegation. He has been one of the strongest pro-life voices in Congress ever since he entered service, and he has also been one of the most outspoken voices on human rights in that body as well. This includes human trafficking. On Monday of this week, two measures authored by Congressman Smith, who was a senior member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, were debated by the House and unanimously passed in voice votes. The House passed the Human Trafficking Prioritization Act and the International Megan's Law to prevent demand for child sex trafficking, which seeks to protect children from sexual predators seeking victims in other countries. Congressman Smith, thank you, first of all, for being here. But it is it's a little known fact that there is a connection between human trafficking and Super Bowl weekend. Welcome to Relevant Radio. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you so very much for having me on. And you're absolutely right. Any large sporting event that goes for the World Cup, certainly goes for the Super Bowl, becomes a magnet for the traffickers, primarily because so many people, stream into town looking for a good time. Parties are held all over in hotel rooms and elsewhere. And unfortunately, the traffickers come in turning young women into commodities and selling them. And unless there's a strong effort for enforcement to push back against that, and by the faith community and everyone else, there is massive amounts of exploitation. Last year, when we had the Super Bowl in New Jersey, and a very strong preemptive effort was made, working with the FBI, working with the New Jersey State Police, for example, and they went after social media. They made it very clear that law enforcement was watching. Women, NGOs, and as well as the Catholic Church and others, made it very clear that they would do everything they can to educate and to motivate. Police were trained to spot the telltale signs of trafficking, what it looks like. Even I held a hearing on January 26th last year. We heard from Amtrak people. We heard from flight attendants and in the hotel industry, a number of hotel corporations that said they're training their personnel to spot trafficking as it's occurring, and then to be in contact with law enforcement. Don't be a vigilante. Let law enforcement immediately swoop in. The good news was that large numbers of pimps were arrested, some 45 pimps and enablers on or around the Super Bowl day. 25 victims at least, including 16 underage girls. Mm. And we do think that all of the publicity may have had a chilling effect on even, those that were not detected. The pimps were made aware that, you do this, we're coming after you. And I know similar efforts are underway in Arizona. The NFL, frankly, could do more. There was attempts to get it into their brochure, the handout when you come in, what to look for with trafficking. They were supportive, but only to a very minimal point. And that's unfortunate. There's more talk about Deflategate,
sure,
than there is about women being exploited and young girls being exploited.
Well, and this is such an incredibly important message. And obviously, as you explained, the connection to these huge global sports events, but it's been obscured by this constant global concentration on what we now think of, believe it or not, what we would refer to as, you know, the mainstream terrorism of ISIS or like-minded groups like that. So, you know, the Holy Father is in your corner, obviously, well, Congressman. I mean, you've got a big and powerful voice there.
Well, his statement in early December, and certainly Pope Benedict, John Paul II before him, and now Pope Francis, couldn't have come at a better time. It was very strong. This is modern-day slavery, and we need zero tolerance. And to properly construe it as a crime against humanity puts it in the league of worst offenses committed on the planet. And having met, you know, I actually am the prime author of America's landmark law. It's known as the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000. It took 3 years to get that legislation passed. There was a lot of indifference. The Clinton administration was against much of it because I held all the hearings. I can say that without any fear of contradiction. But when we presented him the bill after it went through the House and the Senate, he did sign it, so we're always grateful for that. But it was always kind of like crowded out by other urgent matters. Thankfully, and I say this with great joy, the Republican leadership, Kevin McCarthy, for example, has made this a priority of the new Republican Congress, and history was made this week when not one, not two, and two of those new bills were mine. There were 12 anti-human trafficking bills brought to the floor. We're serious about this, and one of mine has failed in the Senate twice, not by a vote, but by Harry Reid refusing to even bring it up for a vote, and that is called the International Megan's Law, which you referenced a moment ago. 4,500 convicted pedophiles in America, according to the GAO, in 2008, when they took a look at this, get passports. They're good for 10 years, and they travel. If you extrapolate that out, you know, passport is good for 10 years. We're talking about large numbers of sex tourists traveling all over the world to Bangkok, to Brazil, to Mexico, to Russia, to Romania, to abuse little children. And this legislation, the International Megan's Law, would notice those countries of destination. You can't stop somebody who has already paid their time in jail, but at least would notice the countries of destination so they can deny a visa, or if they let them in, to watch them like a hawk, and then sets up a reciprocity so that other countries' convicted pedophiles coming to America to abuse our kids will be stopped before they get into the U.S.
Well, and if you are like me, and I think probably most of you in our audience are just, you have your mouth hanging open. You cannot believe the things that we are learning from Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. When we come back, Congressman, I want to ask you how you first became aware of this plague. And we'll do that. We're going to take our break a little bit early, but you're always welcome to join the conversation. 877-ROME 777. Human trafficking and the Super Bowl and the state of Arizona. And there's a North Dakota connection that you just won't even believe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Pope Francis has declared 2015 a year of consecrated life. Bishop Michael Burbidge.
The Holy Father asks that we reflect upon the different forms of consecrated life and the special gift they are to the Church. There are the religious, men and women in consecrated life, and the ones we are most likely to encounter in the Church. However, there are also men and women who belong to secular institutes. Though not religious, they nonetheless take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience while living in the world, working for its sanctification from within. These men and women share in the Church's task of evangelization. Let us give thanks to God for the many men and women who have dedicated themselves to the Church and the perfection of charity. Without them, our Church just would not be the same.
Visit our website, relevantradio.com, and enter keyword year. The Relevant Radio app.
Download that mobile app and listen to us anywhere, especially if your signal gets a little weak wherever you're listening. And tell people around the country that may not have Relevant Radio, whatever platform you're using. It's a great way to stay plugged in to the great programming here at Relevant Radio.
Talk radio for Catholic life.
The Relevant Radio app is free and available for iPhone, Android, Kindle, or Amazon Fire.
Download at relevantradio.com, keyword app.
Take your faith wherever you go with the Relevant Radio app.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on the cutting edge of faith and life.
We want to thank our sponsor, Notre Dame Federal Credit Union, a national financial institution serving thousands of members in all 50 states and throughout the world. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union, NotreDameFCU.com/relevantradio. It is 15 minutes before the hour, and this conversation that we're having with Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey's 4th Congressional District is just, it's stupefying. He is the lone voice in Congress of speaking out and helping to battle human trafficking. And there is this Super Bowl connection, whether it is in Arizona or on the other side of the world during these huge World Cup matches, there is an increased risk and market for human trafficking. And the Holy Father has spoken out about this. And so how, Congressman, and we have some calls, but how did this first come to your attention? When did you realize that this was going to be a very important part of your work in Washington?
Well, you know, I began to see it I've been in since 1981. Matter of fact, my first trip on behalf of human rights was on behalf of Soviet Jews in 1982. I went back and forth to Eastern Europe, to Romania, the Soviet Union, and with the breakup of the Soviet Union, we saw many of the apparatchiks, the KGB types, going into organized crime. Organized crime was obviously in ascendancy all over the world, not just in the former communist countries, the East Bloc countries, for example. Then it coincided with a huge breakout of the Internet, the ability to promote pornography, which created more demand. And during the 8 years that Bill Clinton was in the presidency, and I know this because, you know, the whole idea of the Mies Commission was mine, and good anti-obscenity laws came out of that work from the Ed Mies Commission. And one of the first things that Bill Clinton did when he came in office was to dismantle the Obscenity Strike Unit run so aggressively and effectively by Pat Truman from Minnesota. From that, we had 8 years of no enforcement, or almost law enforcement, no enforcement of our federal anti-obscenity, including child pornography, statutes. And that was part of, certainly not all of it, but part of what created an even more permissive climate for the pornographers, including child pornographers, to proliferate. So you had a terrible convergence of one thing after another, the entitlement society, the permissive society that commodified women to a greater extent, and traffickers stepped into the breach and realized that they could sell women and make as much, if not more, than selling drugs or selling weapons. And today, sex trafficking is right there with, third in the line of being a major money producer for both gangs and for organized crime. So it has been a terrible, surge. And around the year 1995, again, holding hearings, going to East Bloc countries, realizing that there's a sea change of what we thought was going to happen, the breakout of democracy, to a breakout of lawlessness by many of these countries, and Russia would be among those. And in 1998, I'm head of delegation for what we call the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, Parliamentary Assembly. Well, I offered a key resolution at this gathering in St. Petersburg, Russia, while I was simultaneously trying to get the Trafficking Victims Protection Act into law. It was stalled at the time. And we had a big debate among members of parliament and congresses from 56 countries of Europe, including Russia, the venue was in St. Petersburg, Russia. We won that fight. The legislation, it's a resolution, passed, and I am now serving as the special representative for the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly to promote best practices. And then in 2000, of course, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act was passed and became law. It passed the 99 in the House, a year later in the Senate. Sam Brownback, my good friend and colleague, did yeoman's work over on the Senate side. He's now governor, of course, in Kansas. And then it became a matter of implementation and ensuring that on the prevention side, the prosecution side, the three P's as we call it, prosecute up to life imprisonment for traffickers, anyone who recruits, harbors, sells, or endgame, exploits these women or children. And then of course, the protection side. What we included in the law was that anybody who has not attained the age of 18, so all minors, if there's sex trafficking where a commercial sex act has been done for money, commercial, that constitutes sex trafficking. Rather than treating a minor as a perpetrator of a crime, we treat her or him, but it's almost all women and young girls, as a victim. And then anyone after the age of 18, where there's forced fraud or coercion involved, they too would be under the law, and they are now since 2000, a trafficking victim. One of the good things that's happened since we passed this law is that state after state has passed parallel laws. So there's more prosecutors, more tools in the toolbox, again, following the three P's, prevention, prosecution, and protection, so that more people are on the same page. There's still a lack of U.S. attorneys that have taken this as seriously as it ought to be. There is prosecutorial discretion, so, an attorney can decide to take other cases. And there has been a lack of, from our U.S. attorney, U.S. Attorney General, of real hard admonishments to the U.S. attorneys to take up these cases. There's some bright spots, but there's so much more that we need to be doing, and I hope that, more will be done. And that's why I think the 12 bills that passed this week will begin to make even a further difference in this fight against modern-day slavery.
I know that you will be very happy to take this next call, Congressman. Chris Smith is our special guest. We're talking about human trafficking and, as he just said, modern-day slavery. And it is apparently a booming business anytime you have a Super Bowl, a World Series, a World Cup event. And that's why he is getting the word out. He is the lone voice in Congress. But Bill is here in Minnesota. I think you'll be happy to hear from him. Hi, Bill. Thanks for holding. You're on the air on Relevant Radio with the Congressman. Go right ahead.
Sure. I just wanted to encourage the audience that this isn't just the legislature working on this. From a business perspective, our CEO 15 years ago signed a global compact to fight human sex trafficking. And from a contractual perspective, in all of our contracts going forward, we have responsible business clauses where other businesses that do business with us, we insist that they also fight human trafficking and exploitation of children, both in the workforce and sexually. So, and some businesses ask us, why are we doing this? Because there are laws in the books. And we said, because it's not enough. We have to combine it together. And being in the hospitality business, our employees are trained to spot these types of activities and report them to the authorities.
Bill, which hotel?
I can't really talk. It's a global company.
Okay.
I can't really talk.
Oh, that's great. Because I've actually had three hearings where we had different hotel chains that have come and testified about how they've taught their personnel what to spot and who to call when there is a potential trafficking situation occurring. So I do believe the private sector is definitely stepping up to the plate. We need more. Delta Airlines has done a wonderful job of training its airline, particularly flight attendants. Nancy Rivard, who heads up airline ambassadors, she and I traveled over to Ukraine before, unfortunately, things unraveled there. And we've been pushing, and she actually briefed a whole group of us in 2010 and told story after story how a situationally aware flight attendant recognized something, including breaking up a group coming out of pedophiles out of Haiti, a large number of women coming in from Moscow to Chicago, and they broke up these terrible, you know, organized crime, buying and selling of women and children, and put the bad guys behind bars just by being situationally aware. If it doesn't look right, it might not be right. Try to get a conversation, you know, when the young frightened girl heads over to the ladies' room or the restroom, no confrontation, and then tell the pilot if something looks like it's not up to snuff. In 2003, because I've written three major laws on trafficking, including the TPVA, or Trafficking Victims Protection Act, in 2003, when we realized that a lot of government contracts were facilitating, perhaps unwittingly, trafficking, both labor and sex trafficking, I put a provision into that law, which reauthorized the first one, that said that you can lose your contract with the federal government, and we will also, you know, prosecute those who are complicit in this terrible misdeeds. And that is the law. It has not been implemented in a way that I find and others have found to be as robust as it ought to be. But we do oversight hearings. I've had one hearing after another over the years, like I indicated earlier, and we're just going to stay at it. And the supply chain law that passed in California, you know, the report card is still that there's not implementation as effectively as it could be, but realizing that all the feeder industries, what, you know, who you are working with, you know, we need to crack down on that so that there's due diligence. China, when it comes to exploitation of women, especially, is one of the worst when it comes to, what is manufactured and then eventually makes its way to the United States and other Western countries that buy these products in spades. So it is, and the Pope did speak to that. You know, he wants the supply chain emphasis as well. One other thing, and I traveled. I was most recently in Peru and before Africa, Lagos in Nigeria, and over in Bolivia in La Paz on a different trip. It was a human rights trip. All of them were human rights trips. But the nuns and the church on the sheltering issue of providing safe havens for little girls, especially who have been trafficked. My most recent trip in Peru, I was with these some 60 girls, and they stay there for 2 years or more, being loved, cared for, and taught a trade, usually something, with computer skills. One in Ethiopia, I'll never forget, it was in Addis Ababa, and these young women were being taught how to make products that will sell in Ethiopia, especially shoes. It's just amazing, so that they're not as vulnerable to being re-trafficked because they have the ability to get gainful employment. But these young girls in Peru, the Lima, Peru, it was just recently. They sang. They're full of. I mean, a lady of Guadalupe, when at both of the shelters I visited in La Paz, you walk in and it's both government funded, USAID funded, and funded heavily by the church. We had a prayer. There was a statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe. They're getting faith, they're getting hope, and their lives are being completely turned around. And some of the young girls who have been trafficked earlier are there working there, kind of like on a peer-to-peer thing, to help these women know that there's a bright future ahead of them. So the church plays, and I believe, faith-based, when it comes to the shelter issue, the key role in making sure that the woman finds that hope and that sense of reconciliation. She's a victim, but so many of these young girls blame themselves, and it's so long, but they do so.
And Congressman, I think part of the problem is that we probably only talk about it around Super Bowl or World Cup activity. We have to have you back. And really get to the bottom of this. He is one of the strongest pro-life voices in Congress and one of the most outspoken voices. on human rights when it comes to human trafficking. God bless you and the work that you do there in the 4th District of New Jersey. Thank you so much. Sheila is next.